Welcome to PHCP Pros Behind the Wall podcast. I'm Ellen Rohr, plumber's wife, industry icon, and COO of Zoom Dream Franchising Company. With this podcast, our intention is to have real, thought-provoking conversations with people from across the PHCP industry. Of course, we want to entertain and encourage. Mostly, we want to connect and allow our guests to be vulnerable, to explore insights gained and lessons learned. Let's go behind the wall.
I have one of my favorite people in the world on the podcast with me today. Alexis and I met many, many years ago, instantly bonded. We both married plumbers, technical people, HVAC and heating guys. So we have a lot in common just by getting, you know, pulled into the industry through marriage. And then we found right away that we were aligned in so many ways, that this was a path for us to express our creativity and our ambition. And we also related when it came to juggling family and trying to have it all. So Alexis, you've inspired me over the years so many times. You and your husband, Andy, have grown a really amazing company, and you are dealing with the challenges that so many of our listeners deal with. Family and business, trying to grow a team. You're now going multi-shop and multi-state. You've grown an empire, but you're just getting started. So I would like for you to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, the organizations and the companies you're involved with, and what titles you have or maybe should have.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ellen, for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited to be here. So I am the CFO of the Pure Plumbing brand. We have two locations right now, one in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we recently opened a second location in Dallas. So I oversee a lot of all of the financial decisions. And then I also assist with the marketing. And I used to say that I pretty much did everything except turn a wrench. And now our team has grown and I've become a better leader and I've become much better at delegating through following your steps of delegation and really getting serious about growing a team. I've been able to step back more and really focus on the numbers, the marketing, and that's really what I'm good at. That's what I'm passionate about. I was finding myself really hating dealing with the operations, and I'm just going to be real with that. I was finding myself really in a negative space and really feeling drained and really just having a negative attitude towards, you know, whether it was customer concerns or trying to help with figuring out who could, you know, who we were going to dispatch to what calls. And then I really had to take a step back and say, well, why am I doing that? And I realized it was more me feeling like I needed to control and step in. And I had to really take some time and self-reflect and realize that I don't need to be doing that. And me going, you know, going into the call center and figuring out who are we going to dispatch here? That was actually holding my team back. It was holding me back. And it wasn't giving me enough time to be the CFO and focus on the numbers and focus on, you know, what do we need to be pricing our services at? And what do we need to do to continue to grow and scale? So right now, I'm really proud to say—
Interrupt you for just a moment, because that's where you are now. Man, you didn't start there. You didn't start there. So CFO of Pure Plumbing is one of your titles. And yes. I want to explore this a little bit. So how did you get started? Let's go back to where you, I'm going to take you back to when you started in business. And then after that, we're going to go even deeper. We're going to go even further back. Okay. All right. So you and most companies start with one person who sucks one other person in. Is that what happened with you guys?
Yeah. But ironically, I was the one that was like, let's do this. Let's start a plumbing company. So from the time I was a little girl, I had dreams and ambitions of being a business owner. Now I thought I would be a business owner and be like a fashion buyer or have, you know, some kind of gym or nutritional supplements, all these other things that I really love and I'm passionate about. So I never in my wildest dreams imagined that it would be a home service plumbing business that I would be so passionate about. So I always had these ambitions of being a business owner. My husband and I met in our early 20s in Chicago. And at the time he was working for a friend who had a general contracting business. and he was rehabbing condos. Well, we met and he wanted to start his own business doing general contracting. And so we started our own business doing that. But we were just trying to do everything for everyone. So it would be a bathroom remodel one week, a kitchen remodel the next week. And we weren't really priced appropriately. And we were trying to do everything. We weren't specialized. So we had that business and we never made money doing it. We actually ended up losing money. And at that time, I was going to school to become a teacher as well. So I finished my teaching degree and I went on to become a teacher. And I did that for a number of years. And then my husband and I moved to Las Vegas. And we still had these ambitions of having our own business. But at the time, I was teaching full time. And it was during the housing crash in like 2008, 2009. So my husband, who had been doing just construction for a number of years and rehabbing condos and different parts of homes, there wasn't a lot of remodeling work or a lot of like other construction going on because the housing market was crashing here in Las Vegas. So he got back into residential service plumbing and he started working for a plumbing company here in Las Vegas. And he actually forgot how much he actually liked plumbing because he's from a long line of plumbers. He's a fourth generation plumber. So his family has a plumbing business in Santa Fe, New Mexico that has been there. I think they just celebrated like 80 years or something. I mean, it's been there a long time in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So he grew up in the industry and he had had just such a negative stigmatism towards plumbers, which, you know, I'm sad to say that that's just the truth. And he just thought to himself, I never want to be a plumber. I never want to be a plumber. But what I was reminding him about was when we did when we had our general contracting business in Chicago, the part of the general contracting that he actually loved was the plumbing. He would do the majority of the plumbing himself and we would end up saving a lot of money. And he actually really liked it. So then he got back into residential service plumbing here in Las Vegas and he loved it. You know, he is somebody that is really good with people and he's really good at small tasks. When you give him a huge project, it kind of gets overwhelming, but like smaller, broken up, you know, hey, put in this drain, install this, you know, he thrives with that. So he ended up doing amazing with a residential service company here in Nevada. And at that time, I decided to go back and get my MBA. So because I still had this passion for us starting our own business together. And I finished my MBA and I was like, hey, I really want to start this plumbing company. Let's do it. And he still was kind of like, I don't know. And so I sold him on, babe, we're going to make plumbing hot. We're going to make it cool to be a plumber. We're going to make it fun. We're going to do it our own way. Like all of these negative stigmatisms, you know, that you are negative, like thoughts you have about plumbers and plumber crack and everybody drinks all the time. Like we can change that. And it's our duty to do that. So he got excited about it and we got our plumbing license here in Nevada and we started Pure Plumbing in 2014. And I might be a little bit off on that, but you know, we got our plumbing license.
I won't fact check you. It's good enough.
Okay. Okay. It's close enough.
Close enough.
But yeah. And we started our business just from our home. At the time I was still teaching full time. So I was a full-time teacher and then it was just my husband and he had an apprentice and we actually even used like a answering service during the day that answered calls and booked jobs for us. And I continued to teach for the first 9 months. Like I finished that school year, but our business had started really growing and we were hiring more employees. So it then became time for me to put in my resignation with the school district. And then we were full-time Pure Plumbing, both of us. And
I love this. My husband too, Hot Rod, was never going to be a plumber. You know, his dad was a plumber. His granddad was a plumber and just like over it and grew up doing it, did not want to do it. And that has been his career. He was going to do it just until he found something else. And then 60 years later or whatever, he's still doing it. So let's go back a little deeper. Why are you so ambitious? Were you born that way? Was there a figure in your life as a child that really turned you on to being a boss girl? Where did that come from?
So great question, Ellen. I think about this a lot. So I'm the oldest in my family, and I grew up in Chicago and in a very like working class community. It was like in a very young age, I started babysitting for different kids on the block. As soon as I was 15, I got a worker's permit and I worked at a little local grocery store. So I always was very ambitious and very independent when it came to like my finances. I just wanted to be able to buy things when I wanted to buy them. I also was always into like giving back to whether it was a church or some, you know, whatever cause I felt strongly about or animals. And so I always wanted to have financial abundance. So I had choices in my life and then I was able to give back to charitable causes. So there was that aspect. But then I had this different experience. I was a kid that lived in the city of Chicago, but I loved horses. So I loved horses. So my mom would drive me an hour and a half outside of the city so I could ride horses. And there was this horse trainer that I worked with, and she had such an amazing impact on my life. And she had her own business training horses. And she was a very no-nonsense, no BS, like, I mean, hard-ass lady. And I started riding horses with her when I was 6 years old. And I remember my dad would not want to go and watch because she would be so hard on me, like, hey, no, do this. And, you know, she would just be pushing me. And she really pushed me. She got me comfortable being outside of my comfort zone, if that makes sense. And because I was always really little or petite, she would have me like breaking in horses in the summer. I would go spend, you know, a couple days with her at a time in the summer. And just help her train horses. She had an amazing impact on my work ethic. And then also my belief in myself, you know, through doing all these really hard things with her, I started to gain this confidence that, wow, I can do hard things. You know, I can put my mind to doing things I don't even know that I'm capable of. So she had an amazing impact on my life. And I'm so grateful for her.
Does she know that? Have you talked to her?
Oh, to be honest, Ellen, I haven't talked to her in years, but I actually was thinking, I'm going to Chicago in November, and I was thinking about making a trip out to the barn because she still has her barn. She still trains horses. And I would love to tell her that because I haven't told her that. I mean, I think, so I worked with her again in my early 20s, kind of right before I met my husband. And we kind of, you know, she wanted me to go full time with her training horses. And I was kind of like, I don't know, you know, that wasn't really at that point. That's a very hard life. And not that I'm not for a hard life. I just also was a very urban person. So I was like, just so torn at that point in my life. So I didn't end up obviously going and pursuing training horses with her. And so I honestly haven't talked to her in like 15 years, but
will happen with mentors is that at some point sometimes you outgrow them. Sometimes your lives just take a divergent path. And sometimes the humanity of the relationship gets sometimes awkward or different. And I bet she would just love to see you. So I'm excited to hear what happens if you look her up, because just the way you described her and the impact that you've had, she has some reason to feel a lot of pride in you and responsibility for doing you a solid and helping you grow the way you have. I think that story was just so amazing. So thank you for sharing that. So she had a big impact on your life. And this is also, so you are already ambitious. You like to make money. You like to be able to, when you said options, money buys options. That's what it's good for. I love that. And that this person was really instrumental in helping you do things that seemed to be hard, but you did them. I love this. So then, anyone else in this journey, as you and Andy get started with your business, were there people, were there groups, were there, you know, what are some, because we don't know everything, right? So you have to reach out and find things. And so what were some of the salient moments in your development that helped you move beyond a 2 or 3 truck outfit? Because most companies never do. And that can be by design. You know, you get to craft the business that you want in this life. But for those folks who want to grow, sometimes it eludes them how to do it. So who influenced you or what forces influenced you? How did you go and grow from those early days of you and Andy and The Apprentice?
Awesome question, Ellen. So I think we had just done $1 million, or the first year we did $1 million, we started seeking out professional development and we really loved Zig Ziglar. So we went down to Dallas and we went to Ziglar headquarters, and that was the first professional development my husband and I had ever done together. And we did a leadership course, we did a sales class, and then we did a business boot camp. And the business boot camp was done by Howard Partridge, who then I joined Howard's inner circle. But one of the first things when I met Howard and I told him we had a plumbing business, he suggested that I follow you, Ellen Rohr. And I was like so ecstatic, because at that point I was really trying to find myself within this very male dominated industry. And there was, like we were talking about kind of off Zoom or off the record was, you know, there was this imposter syndrome that it was like, well, who am I? You know, because I had seen a lot of husband and wife couples that work together, but, and this is no, I don't mean to discredit anybody, but the wife wasn't super involved. Like she was involved in like answering the phone or planning events, but not like super involved. So I was really trying to find, you know, where I fit in within this industry and who could I look up to. And I was introduced to you, and you really were so inspiring to me to see that you were just this wealth of knowledge and just so confident. And I've just really learned so much.
Oh, you go, girl. You go, girl. Loving it.
It's so true. Well, no, I always loved the numbers. So I always loved the finances of the business. And that was really what I was good at. I mean, when we initially started our business, I had, you know, this 20-page business plan, and, you know, 10 pages of it were projections, the budget. I mean, I just loved the money part. And you were the first person that taught me about percentages. You know, hey, you should have your materials this percentage, this. And that just created so much clarity for me. I had never, you know, I would always be looking at our P&L, but I wasn't like tracking percentages. And so it would be like, I would just see the bottom line and, okay, so there's some money there, the bottom line, but how do I know if that's good? How do I, you know, what's an industry standard? So really through studying percentages, like you've taught me, that has really allowed me to stay in tune with, you know, maybe some, I don't want to call it problems, but if you know, you know, what your percentages should be, then you can start to see, okay, wow, maybe we're spending a little too much on materials. Maybe we're overpaying on labor. Maybe, you know, maybe we need to increase our prices. So you have just been such a phenomenal mentor to me. And I'm really grateful that, you know, our paths have crossed. I was really at a place where I was like, I don't know. I didn't have any women to look up to. And it was very masculine energy, which I love. I have a lot of male mentors as well, but it's just different when you can work with a woman who also had such similar experiences with kind of marrying into the trade. And then you're so passionate about it. And so am I. So it was like, oh my gosh, this is just so perfect.
It's been so fun. And we had such a good time working together. And from my perspective, just to have some, you know, someone who dug it, you know, so often when I'm presenting the numbers, it's like, oh, I know I got to talk about budgeting. Like you'd rather have your teeth pulled and let, you know, hang on, it'll be okay. And you're like, let's do this, you know, all right away, just full on in. And what fun it has always been to play with you. First off, you are already really smart, and to be able to just find a couple things that, oh, maybe this will be helpful to you. It's been very, very rewarding professionally to work with you, as well as to be your BFF in the industry. So, you know, we've had a really good time with this, but your interest in it, your understanding of the importance of it, your good stewardship, all of that was already there. So it was just, it's always been a joy to work with you.
Thank you, Ellen.
So thanks for that. So as you get going, you've already got an affinity for the numbers, you've got the ambition, and you guys are starting to grow. And you found that initial training with Ziglar and with Howard You know how much I love Howard. He's a mutual friend of both of ours. And as you grew then, what were some other, maybe some mistakes you made or directions you went in that either turned into something awesome or, you know, caused a shift in your direction? Tell me about some of the moments that caused those turns in the road for you.
Okay. So this has been such an amazing transitional year for my team. We used to be so attached to having managers, like service managers that had been plumbers. And this year we have hired two managers that they have general knowledge on plumbing, but they're not service plumbers. They weren't service plumbers. They're great managers. They are great at holding people accountable. They're great at leading people. They're great at motivating people. They're great at talking to customers. They're great at developing relationships with team members, but they're not going to be they're not the most technical guys on the team. So we had been really attached to having, you know, service managers have to be somebody that was a plumber. And we've kind of reevaluated that, and it's been phenomenal.
With the two of you, sometimes there can be challenges at the top, like playing mom against dad, right? Or who's going to be the boss of whom? How have you worked out the organizational chart with you and Andy?
Oh, that is such a great question. And that is still honestly a work in progress. You know, I think that working with your spouse is the biggest blessing, but it also can be the biggest challenge. So one of the things I've been really conscious of is really working on myself and not projecting maybe my own stuff onto Andy. Because I found that
Healthy, girl.
Yeah, because I found that I was doing that. I'd be saying, well, you're not doing this. You're not doing this. And the reality was it, because, you know, a lot, your business, your marriage, a lot of times it's a mirror for you. And what I was picking out in him was really something in myself that I'm not developing my personal brand. I'm not working on my podcast. I'm not doing what I want to be doing or what I feel called to do. And instead of me being real with myself that this is something I need to work on internally, I'm picking it out of him and projecting it. So I would really suggest if you are a husband and wife team working together, seek outside coaching or therapy or counseling, whatever, you know, you need to get somebody in your corner that's going to be an outside person that's going to coach you through your own stuff. You know, because you have to really show up healed or else it's going to come out in business and it's going to make it so uncomfortable for everybody around you.
That's so important. I remember when Hot Rod and I decided not to work together anymore. It was, you know, now it seems like, well, of course not, because we had different visions. We wanted different things. But at the time, of course, it was really challenging. And this brutal lesson for me was, I had to stop blaming him for my dreams not coming true. My dreams didn't have to come true through him. It was too much pressure. It wasn't my job to have him do that. It's not his responsibility to make that happen for me. And so that was when, like, well, wait a sec now, in light of not working together and not doing that, wow, it's on me now. I have to find a place. I have to find a way. And I'm not saying I don't relapse, but I got better.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a work in progress. And that's what I would say to any husband and wife, any couples that work together, is really be working on yourself diligently and really, you know, like I said, get that outside person to kind of give you that feedback and be open to that feedback, because the more you work on yourself and you show up healed in yourself, in your marriage, it will all reflect in business.
Oh, that's such good advice. I love that. Now, personally and professionally, tell me about the best part of your life these days. What are the good parts? What are the things that when they're happening, you're thinking, oh, my dreams are coming true? Tell me about the good stuff. And then you can tell me about some of the challenges that you're experiencing as well.
Yes. So right now we are in a season of expansion, and it's been really exciting because this last month, September, we had record sales here in Las Vegas, And then, you know, Dallas is still a new company, but they had record sales there too. And both companies did the most amount of money they've done and the most profit that we've ever done. And I didn't have to do more. So what I love is our team is feeling empowered. And I think because we've let go of some people that maybe were bottlenecking or maybe bringing down team morale, other people have stepped up and they've been able to feel empowered and lead and coach and really just bring out the best in people on the team. So that's been really exciting is, you know, I love,
That's so good.
I love business. So that's always super exciting when I see my team winning. That's amazing. But then on the home front, we have three small children. So my oldest is 5 and he's in kindergarten. So it's just so fun to watch him really start his school career. And he's super into it. I mean, he's got his homework and he's really detailed. And so that's super fun. I have a 4-year-old and he just started soccer. And that is just kids soccer is so funny to watch. And it's just so much fun. So that's just been, that's brought so much joy to our family. And then I have a daughter and oh my goodness, being a girl mom is just so, it's just so amazing. And you know, honestly, I kind of thought I would have all boys. And when I found out I was pregnant with a girl, I was very nervous. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be a good girl mom. I don't know. And I was just so nervous about it. And I'm not really sure why, but it has just been such an amazing experience. And she's just so funny and bossy and outgoing and, you know, and girls do everything a little bit quicker. And I think she's also faster to do everything because she has 2 older brothers. So she talks, she, you know, she started walking at 8 months. So she is just so much, she has so much energy and she's just so fun to be around. So really just spending time at home with the kids is just amazing right now too.
Okay. So as if you weren't busy enough, then you decide to go to Dallas with your next location. What was the thought process? Tell us about that.
So part of our vision was always to be, to create multiple locations throughout the United States. So we always had that vision. We honestly thought that a different area, would be our first place to branch out, but it just, nothing was happening there. And we then, there was deep freezes that happened in Texas. It was in, I think, February of 2021. And there was power outages. There was, pipes froze. There was just a lot of plumbing and just home catastrophes that happened. And it's funny because I actually started thinking about it. I was like, wow, we maybe should look into getting a location down there. And then ironically, that weekend, a friend of my husband's texted him and said, hey, you should see what you can do about sending some crews down here because we're waiting weeks to get a service plumber to our house. And then when Howard Partridge had reached out to me about it too. And it was like everybody, like we just felt like all these signs were just leading us to Dallas. And we always had this like connection with Dallas because it was the first place that we had gone to have professional development. And I've always really liked Dallas. So, and honestly, we weren't attached to Dallas at first. My husband and our general manager went down to Texas and they flew into Dallas and they were going to go to Dallas and then to Austin. And then to, I think they were going to go down to Houston. Well, they ended up never leaving Dallas because they were like, well, this is it. We love it here. So really what brought us to Dallas was there was a huge need for plumbers in Dallas due to this freeze, you know, and then everything just started lining up. We were able to get a license really quickly because there was such a need. If you had an out-of-state license, they were issuing temporary licenses. So everything just started aligning and it just kind of flowed. Now, once we were opened, our policies and procedures probably weren't where they needed to be. So that was a little bit stressful, but we're getting through it. But it just flowed. Like I said, it just kind of like happened for Dallas. And, you know, here we are now and we have a great team down there and things are just really trending in a positive direction for them.
Well, our mutual friend Al Levy says, if you want your next location to be even lukewarm. You better be red hot at the first location. So that need for manuals, I know, is always part of our conversation when we visit, just to make sure that the systems are tight. And that seems to be a big part of what's allowed you to step out. So you are systems focused and you are pretty obsessed about it. Tell me about your journey to get there. You know, putting the procedures in writing and getting people trained and trained and released for positions that you used to hold. How did you do that? A lot of people are trying to do that.
Yes. And to be honest, it's still a work in progress. We are not perfect by any means. Like every week, I really think we get better. But really what I first started focusing on is accounting and, you know, the procedures of what do we do when we get, you know, the money or when we get paperwork from the guys in the morning. So starting with that, when the money comes in, what do we do? You know, how do we create the batch and service Titan? Where do we, you know, when do we export to QuickBooks? So I really just kind of, I wrote a process for our team, which is like the money process. And it was like, started at the basics. Technician gets a check. Technician turns it into the service manager. Service manager gives it to, you know, accounting clerk. And just, I really just followed the trail of money and then down to like, okay, so when the money hits the bank, you know, the bookkeeper does this. And just, I really just spent a lot of time, you know, getting clear on how the money flows in the business. Because for me, the number one thing was the money. If we have money in the bank, everything else is figure outable, at least in my opinion. But it's like, if you don't have the money in the bank and you don't know who owes you money or what you need to pay people, then you got to start there. So that's always where I started, was like, what is our process with the money? Where does, you know, and I got it from your book too. Where does the money go? Is where is our money going? And then from learning from you, financial quick checks weekly. So meeting with the accounting team. And so first I meet with the accounting team, I go over it, and then I share it with service managers and call center manager and the general manager. But really, I always say start where the money, like start with that money process.
I love this. I love this. And just what you described is gold, how simple it is. Because, you know, where do we start with manuals? You just described the physical flow. Where is the check? Let's start with that. Yeah. So who's the position that gets it and where does it actually move to, and document that? That is such good information, such good advice. So, I'm just digging it that you the nerd flag is flying so high. So now you share this information with your service manager and your other team members. How'd that go over? Did they get it right away? Did they care? Were they interested? How did, because usually there's a little bit of a learning curve at that level.
To be honest, there was some resistance, and there's resistance from service managers. Like, to be totally honest, they wanted to get the paperwork and just give it to accounting and not look to make sure that, you know, just the little details, like, okay, so if the technician turns in a check to you, but yet in Service Titan, it still says that there's an open balance, you know, you got to give that back to the tech and say, wait, put in this check, you know, because if you guys don't do that, then I have to have more people in accounting and it's going to take a lot more time, where it shouldn't leave your desk until, okay, here are the checks. They go to accounting and it's all in Service Titan. So there was resistance from, I would say, from service managers, because they thought, well, that's accounting. And I said, no, how can you own your numbers? Because what would be happening, and this probably happens in a lot of businesses, is we would have a daily huddle and the service managers would be coming to the huddle saying, we did $20,000. And then accounting would be saying, well, where's this $20,000? We have 15, you know? So it's like, you need to own your numbers in the service managers do own the technician's numbers and make sure that it's in Service Titan. Because if you're saying $20,000, but Service Titan is saying 15, it's 15. You know, we've got to all follow the same process. So there was resistance from the service managers, but I think now they're totally bought in, because what they, you know, the way I describe it too, is just kind of what I said before, is, you know, if we don't get paid, there's no long-term stability for the service managers. So it's your job to, yes, make sure that the technicians are delivering phenomenal service, but also that we're getting paid, You know, like that is a big deal. And if we're not getting paid, I can't guarantee that you're going to have a job. And that's the reality.
This is all goosebumps for me. I just love how certain you are, how clear you are. Is this that hard? It is not. Premium service for premium prices and follow the money. It's so good. So good. So let me shift gears here a little bit, because you have other areas of your life that interest you. You are a businesswoman, but you are interested in health. You are interested in fashion. And you said those interests have been with you your whole life too. How are you balancing that? How do you balance, and balance is such a weird word, but how do you juggle it all? You're a businesswoman, you're a mom, and you also are someone who takes care of themselves. You know, you prioritize your health and your well-being. Talk to me about how you're juggling these things.
Great question, Ellen. So I think it's so important to prioritize your own health, because if you're not healthy, you can't help other people, you know, and that's number one. So I'm really intentional on like what I eat and how I fuel my body. So I really get clear on what kind of foods I want to eat. I actually right now I have a housekeeper and she helps cook for me. So, you know, I'll buy all the groceries, she'll pick them up for me. And then we kind of meal plan, you know, hey, tonight chicken, tomorrow this. And it's amazing because that frees me up. It gives me time, because for me, it's so important for not only myself to eat healthy, but for my family. And what I found is when I didn't have that a few years ago, my kids, we would end up eating, you know, we'd either Uber Eats something, or I'd get out a frozen pizza or some chicken nuggets. And we still do that. But when it's every day that the kids are just eating frozen processed foods, I literally, my kids were getting sick. They were, you know, oh, they'd get a cold. Oh, they'd get, you know, all these random little kid things that, you know, kids get, but it was way more frequent when they were eating frozen foods. Or, you know, we never really were big on fast foods, but we would Uber Eats and they'd get, you know, chicken tenders and fries or whatever it was. But I'm really intentional on what I feed myself and what I feed my family. And in order to do that, because I am so busy, is I pay somebody to help me cook. And that really frees me up. Second thing is I love to move my body. So I try to work out at least 5 days a week. And I used to be super strict with like what I would be doing. You know, I love to run too, like you, Ellen. So I would run a lot. And I still do run a lot, but now I've kind of let my body, I kind of let my body help me know what it needs to do. So for instance, today I skipped my workout. I was feeling kind of tired. I wanted to spend more time with the kids. So I spent more time with them. You know, before I would be like beating myself up, oh no, why would I skip my workout? But it's okay. You know, my body was tired and sometimes your body needs rest. So I like to do yoga as well. So if I'm feeling really sore and I don't want to lift weights or I don't want to run, I'll do yoga, or I'll, you know, I love riding my Peloton. So I really try to diversify my workouts too, so I don't get bored with it. And then, you know, I let my body kind of tell me what it needs that time, where in years past, I'd be like, nope, I'm running today. I don't care if I'm really sore, I'm going to get through it. And then I would end up with shin splints or an injury, and not even so much a physical injury. I might end that workout feeling drained and not fulfilled, because a lot of, you know, I work out one to stay in shape, but it's also for me so mental, and it's so clearing, and I'm able to get so much clarity and so much energy and the endorphins, and I'm able to show up as a better leader because I've taken that time for myself to get really clear. And I also lately I've been really into energy. And if I'm feeling anxious or if I'm feeling stressed out or if I'm feeling angry, moving that energy out of my body is so therapeutic. So it's like, maybe I'm feeling angry about a situation that happened, rather than getting on my phone and sending some nasty text messages, I'll put my phone down and I'll get on the treadmill and I'll run, or I'll, you know, move my body in a different way to move that stress, that anxiety, that anger out. And then I'm able to get kind of above the situation and think, okay, I'm feeling this emotion for a reason. What is this trying to tell me? And then I can show up as a better leader, because to be honest, this is some really great feedback that my general manager gave me. And this is the other thing, that as leaders, you have to have people in your corner that are going to be real with you. And you have to be able to take that, because I used to be the queen of, I'd be at home getting the kids ready for school, and maybe the kids would be having a meltdown, or they'd be having a bad morning, because that's kids. It happens. And then I'd see, we got a bad review, right? And I'm so mad. So then I start text messaging everybody. Hey, what happened with this review? Let me know this technician now, you know, and I'm showing up in this angry energy. And that's not healthy, because nobody wants to get a bad review. That's not anybody's intention. The managers are already upset too. So it's like me showing up in this frantic, mad energy is just making the situation worse. And we're not in a calm place trying to solve the problem. We're just discussing it. Or the other piece to that is, we got so stuck in the blame. This person's fault. And it's like, blaming, what is that going to do? That's not going to solve the problem, you know? So, you know, have people in your corner that can tell you, because that's really, the general manager called me one morning after I'd sent this text, and he was like, please, Alexis, please don't send any more text messages when you're mad.
Honey.
Yes. Yeah. And then I was able to be like, you are so right. I am so sorry. I will do everything I can to be a better leader and not send those text messages. I will, you know, wait until I get into the office. We will talk face to face. I'm not going to do that anymore. And that really, that has been helpful for my team too.
Oh, I love that. I love the way you said it too. People just talk real to each other. Let's get real with each other, you know, and that can cut through a lot. And blame and shame, really, do we have to? Let's assume people are doing the best they can do right now, and let's go figure out the processes or the systems that fell apart, or charge enough that if you make a mistake, you can buy your way out of it. You know, some of these things who wants to call us? Absolutely no one. So we're going to have upset people now and then. I love, love, love your perspective on this. So in addition to all this, I know you're starting a podcast too. Tell us about that.
Yes, I am so excited. I am starting a podcast, The Queen of the Trades, and it's for women in male-dominated industries. I'm going to talk a lot about business, leadership, financials, health and fitness, relationships. I'm going to do some meditations, some affirmations, all of the things that I have found super helpful on my journey. I just want to share with other women and help them thrive in their careers and home life as well.
I love that. Oh, you know, I just thought of something, going back to your energy comment about, you know, just trying to manage energy. I have a lot of energy, and unless I use it for good, it can be quite destructive. So I understand that. And someone pointed out to me once that, you know, when like you see ducks in a pond and there's some territorial thing going on, and there's like all this quack, 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 quack. When they're done with it, they'll do this flap, flap, flap thing with their wings to shed the energy. And then they kind of pull it back together again, and then they can be copacetic. And that, when you were talking about that, you know, managing that energy, because if you just boom, 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 let it fly, you're going to blow up a lot of people. And I certainly have done that myself. That was really, really good counsel. Don't text when you're angry.
No. Oh my God.
You know, figure out the energy first, and then come from a place of, if I do need to shed energy and I go for a run or a walk, then afterwards the endorphins are there. You're like, all right, this is survivable. We can figure this out. That's very, very good advice. All right. So
two more things. Ellen, can I mention these two more things about energy?
Yes.
Cause they just came to me, cause I wanted to make sure I mentioned these, cause they go with your other question. Is two things that I'm really consistent with as well in my life is meditation. So I meditate every day, and I don't do, you know, 20 minutes of meditation. I do a quick 5-minute meditation, and I try to do it first thing in the morning when I get up, like before my kids get up. But if that doesn't happen, then when I first get into the office, I'll sit down and do a 5-minute meditation. Sometimes I do guided meditations. A lot of times I just do quiet and just breathing. But that's been phenomenal and just life-changing for me.
Love it.
And then the second thing is journaling, you know, writing down you know, your feelings, or if you are feeling angry or stressed out, writing those things down before you go talk to the team about it. So then you can get really clear on, am I overreacting? Or is there, just like you were saying, is there a process that's failing? Is there, do we need a process? Because sometimes it's maybe we just didn't have a process. You know, so really journaling. And I know so many people love to type and do stuff on their phones and computers, and that's great, but there's something so therapeutic about an old-fashioned journal or notebook. And you taught me this too, the notebook. Oh my gosh, Ellen, I still have, yeah, I have my business notebook. Exactly.
I know.
And, you know, and don't get me wrong, I transfer that then to my top projects, but I would just really recommend, I was even just saying this recently to my team members, because they're like, I just do it all on my phone. And I'm like, you know, there's something that writing it down, I don't know if it's some kind of mind thing, but it's just, I find it so therapeutic. So I really recommend that everybody get a notebook, a journal, and write down your thoughts, your visions, even your to-dos. You know, I just cannot, you know, I just want to thank you too, because you were so instrumental in helping me instill that so long ago. And I remember thinking, you know, because I just think the world of you, and I'm like, Ellen Rohr is saying to get a notebook? Like, wow, this is like so, you know, I'm like, she uses a notebook too? Like, this is just so.
Use a notebook. Well, and even with the team members, and if they can keep up on their phone, I don't always fight that battle, but if they're not writing or typing when I'm talking, I stop talking, because nobody can remember stuff. If we're just, you know, spouting out directives, that's a suggestion. That's not a directive until somebody's absolutely writing it down. So my question was going to be like, tell me about a couple of tools that you use to keep yourself organized. And that was perfect right there. So let me ask you, this is a Proust question. What does happiness mean to you? This will be our wrap up question. What does happiness mean to you?
Ooh, okay. Happiness means to me helping people and fulfilling your life purpose. So giving back to people in your community, giving back to people in the industry, giving back to charitable causes that I feel strongly about. So really just giving back and giving to the people around me, that brings me so much happiness.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I'm so looking forward to your podcast. So when can we listen and subscribe and all that? What do you got going on?
It'll be out end of November, and you can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. You can also find me on Instagram at the Queen of the Trades. I'm pretty active on there as well.
Yes, you are. And Instagram is how I keep in touch with friends, and you do such a great job. You're beautiful. You're wonderful. You're kind. You're smart. I love you. Love you so much. So thanks for spending the time with me.
Thank you, Ellen. This was awesome.
It was great to get behind the wall with you, Alexis. And so, dear listener, we are out.